This is Bob Main, and you're listening to another episode of today's Survival Show. Episode 149, to be exact, where it's my goal to talk about doing what you can with what you have, wherever you are, as Teddy Roosevelt once said. This is a practical preparedness podcast. I don't go tinfoil hat on you. I don't engage in that type of far-out thinking like that. I just try to keep this rooted in common sense, and mainly the reason I do that is, look, I have a positive attitude, and I think a lot of these tinfoil hatters have a real negative attitude. Now, I'm not saying that there aren't problems out there and that we shouldn't get prepared. I'm not saying that. I mean, if that was what I was saying, then I wouldn't even be doing this podcast. I wouldn't even be spending my time doing this and trying to get this message out. What I'm saying is that the outlook looks a lot more positive if you're not dependent on other people or dependent on government for assistance and for your very existence. You see, the people who are the most positive right now, I firmly believe, are those who are the most prepared. They feel more secure. They feel more ready. Those who are negative are the ones, as we see in the United Kingdom right now, in London and other parts of the United Kingdom, for example, they're the ones more negative because they're the ones more dependent on government and on other people and other entities. And when you become dependent, and all of a sudden, your source of existence, your source of supplies, your source of money, and everything else, when that source begins to dry up or cut back or dwindle, that's when people get negative. Sometimes they get violent. Sometimes they go, you know, and do things that they would not ordinarily do. And that's what we're seeing right now. But me and my family, we remain a little bit more positive because we are prepared. We keep ourselves ready. And that's what I like to talk about in this show. So I'm driving down the freeway right now in between sales calls. If you're relatively new to this program, I'm a professional salesperson. I sell access control products for hotels and motels. And that's pretty much what I do. I travel around South Texas and parts of Louisiana. And so I take advantage of some windshield time while I'm driving down the road. And I put together some of my thoughts ahead of time. And when I get on the road, I get on the open road and I've got a little bit of extra time, I start speaking to my recorder here using my headset, and then eventually I make this into an MP3 podcast, and I upload it to the website and to iTunes and so forth for you to listen to. So, you know, you might hear a little bit of background noise, but I'm doing the best I can to keep that out. So this show is primarily going to be an interview. There is a gentleman in Utah by the name of Jason Christensen who owns a company called Concealment Solutions. Now, what Concealment Solutions does is manufacture concealed carry holsters. And I first got to know Jason because I do another show all about guns called the Handgun World Show. That's Handgun World Show at handgunworld.com. I like to keep today's survival show more focused on other areas of preparedness that don't have anything to do with firearms. Because there's a lot more we should be doing than just buying up guns and ammo. But that's how I met Jason. I found out that Jason's a prepper. Jason and his family live the preparedness lifestyle. And I'm going to let him tell you why. During this excellent interview coming up, he's going to share some of his experiences. Now, he's been doing a lot. Beekeeping, raising chickens, gardening. He's found ways to get fresh produce. And we talk about stuff like that. So this show is kind of a mixed bag of survival topics, but mainly it has a lot to do with beekeeping, raising chickens and laying hens, growing a bit of a garden, and also finding some fresh produce and the types of trees and things that he's growing, and basically making his property produce for him. And you know, when I first started the forum that's connected with this show. One of the threads that I started on the forum was basically making your home work for you. A lot of people work hard for their home, and they work hard to make money to buy their home and to pay the mortgage, but do you make your home work for you? Do you make your homestead pay off? Do you make it pay you back? I think that's one of the key things, don't you? Making your home pay you back. And so Jason talks a lot about that in this interview. We don't spend much time on guns at all. We spend enough time on guns so that you get familiar with what it is that he does for a business. And by the way, his holsters are great. If some of you are in looking for a good, comfortable concealed carry holster, check out his company at concealmentsolutions.com. Okay, so I'm going to turn on the interview here in a minute. I just want to make a couple of announcements real quick. The first is the website, todayssurvival.com. That's with two S's, todayssurvival.com. If you're on iTunes, would you do me a favor if you listen to this show on iTunes? I'd like to know what you think of this show. Good, bad, indifferent, I don't care. Put some comments up there. There's been good comments lately. There's been a couple of critiques of my show. That's okay. It doesn't bother me, folks. I like critics. I think critics are great. You know, critics always help me improve. Also, there's been some excellent feedback on there lately, people saying that they're getting a lot of good, useful information, and that I keep it practical, and that I don't get on my the stump and start preaching at people. That's not really what my goal is. My goal is more to share information in a usable, pleasant format for you to listen to, and hopefully I'm achieving that goal. So if you wouldn't mind putting in a review on iTunes about this show, if you haven't done that already. The last announcement that I want to cover is about the forum. I approve several new members every week. Please join our forum. It is free, as almost all forums are out there. And I'm not going to hit you up for membership dues for the forum. I've seen some forums where, you know, you're constantly being hit up for premium memberships and so forth. I don't do that. Okay? There's probably 730 some odd people on the forum right now that like to share good ideas with you. When like-minded people get together, whether it's on the internet or in person, when like-minded people get together, folks, that's when really cool ideas get shared back and forth. So go to todayssurvival.com and click the forum button. It'll give you instructions on how to find it and how to get signed up. That's it. That's all for the announcements. I don't like this show to get too commercial. So with that said, there'll be just a quick little pause, a quick little announcement possibly, maybe even just a little bit of music or something like that. And then I'm going to bring Jason Christensen on to talk about beekeeping, gardening, raising chickens, fruit trees, and a couple of other subjects that I'll just leave as a surprise. Stay tuned. Okay, joining me is my special guest for this program, Jason Christensen. He's the owner and founder of Concealment Solutions. How you doing, Jason?
I'm doing good, Bob. Nice to talk to you again.
Yeah, and the reason he says again, folks, is for some of you who listen to my Handgun World show, I just had him on the last episode talking about his holsters. And as a matter of fact, you know, there's a lot of preppers who listen to this that are also concealed carry enthusiasts, and they believe in their Second Amendment rights. So talk a little bit about your holster company.
It's called Concealment Solutions. You can find it at concealmentsolutions.com. Really a new business. I started making holsters last year, launched the website at the beginning of this year, and it just keeps getting bigger and bigger all the time. It's been fun to watch it expand and get more popular, and finding different reviews that people are leaving on the internet on different forums and stuff like that. It's cool to be able to make something that so many people are happy with and telling their friends about.
Well, I promise that I will be one of those people on the internet doing a review. Just to let all the listeners know, Jason's sending me a holster to try out to carry my car PM9 in, and I'm going to do that for a couple of weeks and review it, and I might be one of those guys on the internet doing that for you.
Well, good. I hope so.
Yeah, so you're a prepper as well. Not only do you make holsters, excellent concealed carry holsters, which I think is really cool, but you sent me an email, and you said you and your wife believe in survival. You believe in preparedness, don't you?
Yeah. It's interesting. I mean, I don't think until recently that we've ever considered ourselves preppers before, but that's the way we were raised, both of us in our separate families, lived on opposite ends of the country, you know, when we were young. It's kind of the lifestyle that we grew up with. And so it's weird for us to think any other way, I guess, when you talk about like food storage and stuff like that. You know, I grew up in the Bay Area in California, and you know, our garage, we had one wall that was shelves, and there was a large percentage of that shelf that was freeze-dried food and stuff that my mom had canned and stuff like that. So, it wasn't until, the last few years, starting to listen to podcasts like yours and others talking about prepping and stuff like that, that we realized we were preppers, I guess.
You were preppers and you didn't know it.
Yeah. And you know, listening to things, and I think there's kind of a resurgence in this mentality of being prepared for events that are beyond your control, whether it be, losing a job or the zombies have unleashed, looking at it's opened our eyes quite a bit to a lot of other things that maybe we were lacking in, and new ideas that we've incorporated into our lifestyle. So it's been fun. It's something that we've always enjoyed doing, and it just gives you peace of mind anyway, if nothing else,
Well, you're exactly right. A couple minutes ago you said something interesting. You said, hey, it's the way we've always lived. And isn't that the truth? It seems like a lot of people who are preppers, they don't know that they're preppers. They do the same thing that you said. That's always the way that they've lived. That's what they were taught. That's kind of my background too. When I was a kid, we were a very self-sufficient family. And, unfortunately, I went through a long period of time where I ignored a lot of that. And of course, now I'm obviously last few years or so, my mind is much more focused. Really, since September 11th, that kind of woke me up and got me, thinking, hey, I better get back on track here, back to my roots. But it's interesting how you have a certain segment of people who grew up that way, and they've always known the prepper lifestyle. And then it seems like there's another segment out there who did not grow up that way and don't know it, but their eyes and ears are opening up. Have you noticed that?
Yeah. And I think 9/11, like you mentioned, was a major turning point for a lot of people. I think the Y2K was kind of the precursor test, and I thought that was a bunch of baloney anyway. I didn't buy into any of that, but a lot of people did. In fact, my brother got a pretty sweet deal on a whole lot of long-term food storage right after that.
I bet he did. I wish I would have taken advantage of some of those.
Exactly. Me too. I wasn't the long-term stuff, the freeze-dried stuff, is something that we're just starting to look at, other than our own dried stuff that we make. But yeah, I think there's a lot more people opening their eyes now. And there's a lot of people that I know that, like you said, kind of grew up this way and have lost their roots, that are kind of opening their eyes again. And I think what's going on in the government and around the world is kind of a rude awakening for some people that just feel like that, nothing bad's ever going to happen to me, and fortunately, none of us are immune to disaster, however big or small.
Yeah, well, and you mentioned something earlier. One of the biggest disasters that people don't even think about is the loss of a job, which is so prevalent today. It's, you know, there's so, it's such a bad situation out there. I thank my lucky stars every day when I get up that I'm going to earn a paycheck today, and I'm always kind of looking over my shoulder hoping that it doesn't go away. And that's something that people just ignore, and they don't seem to prepare for that. You sent me an email earlier, a couple of days ago, actually, and you talked about a lot of things that you and your family are doing. Why don't you talk about that?
Well, some of the new things, I guess, that we've incorporated, we've always tried to have food storage. I mean, we already eat a lot of beans and rice and tortillas. And, I mean, that's just, our family likes that stuff. And so we've always had a lot of dried beans and that sort of thing on hand, and the wheat. And we both cook. Kids all have days that they cook. That, I think, is a very important skill that a lot of people overlook.
Mm-hmm. I just got done talking about that, a couple of podcasts on that.
Oh, I'll have to go back and listen to it.
Yeah.
But, yeah, cooking, I think, is an invaluable skill. And so our kids, you know, we give them nights to cook, and sometimes we pay for it, and other times we're pleasantly surprised. So that's an important thing to incorporate when you have a family. But let's see, I guess a couple years ago, I'll give you a little bit of background on where we're at. And we're in not a huge, you know, suburb, but it's a fairly small town, but the Provo Orem area in Utah County. So it's not like, you know, outside a major city. I mean, Salt Lake's 60 miles away. That's the biggest city we got here. So to give you an idea of what we're looking at. But our subdivision where we live is an older one. And when they talk about postage stamp size lots, that's pretty much what we live on.
Really?
So we have a really small lot. And I should have looked it up so I could tell you exactly how big it is. But I don't know off the top of my head. Until a couple of years ago, we had two apple trees. One of them died. It was old. We got rid of it. Last year, we planted a peach tree. We plant a
good for you
plum tree. We've always had a garden. And we still have, you know, our back lawn and the area for the swings and stuff for the kids. So just so people don't think that, you know, our yard is just garden. But last year, we also incorporated two beehives and a chicken coop. Now, in our city limits, they just changed this, so I guess technically it was illegal when we did it, but we weren't too concerned. But you can have, I think, up to 6 hens in the city limits. So we've got 4 right now. We didn't do the best research when we chose the breed. We have Brahmas, which are great big birds, and they have the feathers that go all the way down their feet, and they're supposed to be real mild-tempered. And so I think we chose them more as pets than we did as a food source.
Yeah, I know exactly what chickens you're talking about.
Yeah,
we used to raise those.
They're great birds, and they lay okay, but, I mean, in the wintertime, they pretty much just stop altogether.
Yeah.
So this is their last year. And then next spring we'll get, I think we're looking at getting a couple barred rocks and some Rhode Island Reds, something that will produce a little more regularly. So
good.
We've got those. We also use those for compost. We don't have a compost pile anymore. All the food scraps and everything goes straight into the chicken coop, and we let them compost it for us.
Nice.
Which is really cool.
Yes.
The beehives, that was something that I started with my brother. That's been a really cool experience. If you've ever had kept bees, they're just fascinating to watch.
Now, I have never done that, so I'm looking forward to what you're about to say here.
Okay.
I've never tried to keep bees. In fact, when I was a kid, we kept just about every other kind of creature, but we never kept bees. So tell us about that.
Well, we got involved, and the best way to do it is kind of the way I did it. I got a book. I what's it called? The Beekeeping for Dummies. And I swore I would never buy one of those books because that would just admitting that you're a dummy. But everybody recommended it. Excellent, excellent resource. If you have any interest at all in beehives, that's the book to start with. excuse me. So got the book, started reading it, got in touch with a local organization, the Utah County Beekeepers Association. And we lucked out because this group is just an excellent, excellent resource. They're very organized. They have meetings every month, good information, and just excellent resource. So look for something like that in your area if you're looking to get into bees. So anyway, we got in touch with them through them, you know, went to a meeting or two. There's always people in those groups that sell the equipment, sell the hives. So we bought four hives between the two of us. I put them all together, painted them, got them all set up, and then we started off with what's called a nuke, which is, my wife is really the expert beekeeper now, because since this year my business really got busy, and so she kind of took over the beekeeping, and she's a much better student than I am. But a nuke is basically, it's a more mature hive. And so we started a little later in the season than we should have, and so we got a little older group of bees. Put them in, got them set up, and the first thing that these bees do the first morning is they fly figure eight patterns, and that basically helps orient them. So when they leave to go foraging, they know where the hive is. They know where to come back to. So Sunday afternoon, I just hear this humming in the backyard. That's weird. And I open the door, and there is just clouds of bees outside my hives flying these figure eight patterns. And I actually got my lawn chair, and I sat about a foot and a half, 2 feet in front of the openings of the hives, kind of in the middle of all of this, just watching them. And you could start seeing bees come in with pollen on their legs, and It was really cool. But after that, they mellowed out, and they go straight to work. We didn't get a harvest last year, partly because we started late, partly because I didn't do things quite exactly the way I should have, and our queen got up into the part of the hive where they're supposed to just lay away honey, and she got up in there and laid eggs instead. So we missed out on that. This spring was really exciting because one of our hives actually died, and we think because we didn't have good ventilation through the hive for the winter. And it was actually my strong hive all summer long. It had a bigger colony and everything, and so that was kind of a bummer. Pulled that hive down. There was actually honey in it, so we actually harvested that, got, you know, 2.5 gallons of honey out of it, which is not very much, but compared to what they will produce. One afternoon, because the winter or our spring here was so cold and wet that the bees couldn't really get out much, the hive got really overcrowded. And when that happens, they decide they need a new place to live. And so they create a new queen, and half the hive leaves with that queen, and that's what's called a swarm. And you've heard of that when bees are swarming. Now, one thing people need to understand, when bees swarm, that is when they are at their most mellow temperament-wise.
And a lot of people think it's the opposite. People think that's when they're the most violent.
Exactly.
Right?
You see these guys that do the bee beards, and they're covered in bees and stuff like that. That's a hive that has swarmed, and that's why they can do that, because the bees, basically, all they're concerned about is staying with the queen and finding a new place to live. And so those bees wouldn't be swarming like that if the queen wasn't in there somewhere.
Yeah, that's not going to be their normal behavior.
Right. So anyway, our hive swarmed, and oh my gosh, and I've got video of this. It looks like a scene out of a horror movie. Because
I'd love to see that video.
You put the I pointed the camera up at the sky, and it's just bees everywhere. And they actually swarmed twice. The first time they swarmed, they all went right back into the hive, which nobody's ever heard of before. But a thunderstorm came in about an hour later. And so I think they sensed the storm coming, and they all went back. But it almost to the minute, a week later, they swarmed again. But this time they went into my neighbor's yard, and they started clustering on this tree. And I have video of us fumbling our way through trying to capture the swarm. So they all clustered on the tree. I had an extra hive because of the hive that died, so I brought the hive over, sat it on the grass. Eventually, I dumped all the better part of the bees into a box, dumped that into the new hive. So long as the queen goes in that box, all mm-hmm. the other bees will go into it. And so I dumped, got as many as I could, rounded up, dumped them into that hive, and then left. Came back a couple hours later, there were only a handful of bees left on this tree where the queen had gone to. All the rest of them were inside the new hive. When it got dark, as soon as it's dark, they won't go out anymore. So it got dark, picked up the hive, put it back where it was next to my other hive in the garden, and next day, bees were out doing their figure eight, and they had a new home, and now I've got two hives again. So it was really a cool experience. And we are probably next week, we will have our first really good harvest. We figure we've got probably 50 or 60 pounds of honey in the one hive.
That's pretty good.
So, yeah. I mean, we should, we'll probably get 5 gallons of honey out of it. The other,
nice.
The hive that swarmed, the new one, we won't harvest anything out of that one this year. We don't like to feed them ourselves if we don't have to. We'd like them to fill up their own stores, and so far as they've got enough, we'll let them keep their honey so that they can winter on it, and then just let it go, and then next year we'll start harvesting that one as well. So we're looking forward to that. It's neat to see what you get.
Yeah, well, how long have you been beekeeping?
This is our second year.
Well, you've learned a lot in just a couple of years.
We've learned a ton. When my wife took over the beekeeping, and I help her with it, but she really has become the expert now. She took a beginner beekeeping class from this local group that we belong to, and boy, the cool thing about that is when you take that class, they give you a mentor. So they give you somebody who is an experienced beekeeper that lives, you know, within a few miles of you, that if you have a question or you have a concern, you call this person, they'll come to the house and check out your hives for you or just answer questions that you have. And
that's cool.
And that was, you know, we did that when we had the swarm, because I tried to gather those bees up 3 or 4 different times, and they just kept going back up into that tree until we realized, oh, we got to let them cluster into a nice tight ball. Then bring them down, and you'll have a better chance of having the queen in there. So
yeah,
that's
so
cool.
So Jason, what are you and your family doing with the honey?
So far, because we haven't had very much, it's going into our food storage.
good.
But you know, this year we'll have enough. You know, things, you know, that we take to neighbors and stuff like that. Neighbors will probably get jars of honey around Christmas and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. We make our own granola, and we use primarily honey for the sweetener for that. So we use it a lot. We'll be using it a lot more. But yeah, the nice thing about honey is it doesn't ever go bad. You know, it'll crystallize and it'll harden. And if you have honey like that in your food store, don't throw it out. There's nothing wrong with it. All you have to do is put it in a pot of water and heat it up, and it'll melt right down and be just as good as it was when you put it in the pots.
Yeah, it'll decrystallize.
Yeah.
So this holster that you just sent me, you didn't throw a jar of honey in that box, did you?
I didn't.
Oh, no, that's too bad.
Maybe next time. My brother last year, he got a fair amount of honey, and where he lives up on the hillside and has a lot of acreage, and he's a major gardener and all that, but he has a whole bunch of lemon balm in his yard, and the honey that he harvests, it was a really bright, bright yellow, and it had a lemony aftertaste to it. It is the best tasting honey I've ever had. It was so cool.
Oh, man. That just sounds so good just hearing that. Man,
I don't think we're going to be fortunate enough to get that again. At least not. We're several miles from him, so.
Well, that's cool. Thanks for sharing that beekeeping experience with us. I think that's pretty neat. So, and I think you said you guys do quite a bit of canning too, don't you?
Not as much as we probably should, but yeah. I mean, that's every year we do something. We have one of the other things I kind of wanted to talk about along this line was where to get produce and stuff like that. Where we live, we're limited on what we can grow just because our lot's so small. But we have a friend that has the biggest cherry trees I've ever seen in my life. I mean, she doesn't trim them. She doesn't do anything with them. They're just huge. And every year, well, except this year, she didn't get any for whatever reason. I don't know if they froze or what, but she's like, yeah, come on over. The cherries are on. She's like, there's no way in the world I can use all these cherries. And so the whole family goes down. We up in ladders with buckets, and we'll bring home, you know, 2 or 3 5-gallon buckets full of cherries that cost us nothing except, you know, a little bit of work. And we will dry those. In fact, we got some that a neighbor brought us that we just put on the dehydrator Monday. Those are great. If you've never had dried cherries, boy, those are awesome.
Oh, I haven't. Man, listening to you talk, Jason, it's a good thing I already had dinner. Otherwise, yeah. I'd be saying, look, Jason, I got to go right now because I'm so hungry.
Yeah. But so we'll dry the cherries and then make cherry jam and stuff like that.
Oh, good stuff.
Last year, we had another neighbor just a couple streets over. You know, we're walking with the family one day, and big apple tree, and it was full of apples. And this is, you know, they are friends of ours, and we thought, why aren't they picking their apples? And so I finally asked them, I said, hey, are you guys gonna pick those apples, or are you just gonna let them go to waste? And she said, we've already picked more apples than we know what to do with. She said, if you want them, come get them. And so the next day, grabbed the kids, and we headed down the street with the wagon, and we loaded a deep high-sided wagon full of apples that we made applesauce. We dehydrated apples. We made pies. I mean, we had so many apples from that. And so I hear another neighbor just the other day, and it makes me sick when I hear this. And I know this is happening in everybody's neighborhood, wherever you live. You know, ask my son if she could come help him clean up the apricots on the that had fallen off her tree. She just let them all rot on the tree.
Oh, no.
Yeah, I was like, oh, my gosh, are you kidding me? There's nothing better than apricot jam. And, you know, but there's people like that that just don't, you know, they moved into a house that has fruit trees, and they don't do anything with them. They don't care. They don't want to. It's easier to go buy what they want at the grocery store than pick it. You know, and a lot of people think it's there's something wrong with it to eat something that you grew yourself, which I think is just insane.
Well, that's how people are conditioned, though. I mean, you know, they're taught that you go to the store and get food, and that's where it's supposed to come from.
Yeah, I know a woman that has chickens, and she gives the eggs to her dogs because she doesn't understand. She doesn't think that the egg that comes out of her chicken, there's something that's wrong with it because it didn't come from the store. It's not clean or whatever. I don't know. It's insane.
She gives the eggs, the fresh laid eggs, to her dogs?
Yes. Yeah.
Good night. What is up with that? But see, there you go. That's the conditioning. People think it has to come from the store, from a box, from a carton. Makes you cringe, doesn't it?
Yeah. I love walking out to the chicken coop. It's, you know, maybe in the morning it's like, I want an egg sandwich for breakfast, and you push that chicken off the egg and it's still warm and you crack it in the pan and there's nothing better.
Oh, that's the way I grew up. We used to have our own fresh eggs. We had at least 6 or 7 laying hens, and let me tell you what, once they start laying, boy, they can really produce a lot of eggs.
Yeah, if you get the right breed.
Yeah, I can't remember what breed it was. It's not the ones that you mentioned earlier in this show.
Yeah.
I can't remember what we had, but that's amazing that this lady was doing that, you know, and it kind of reminds me of a few years back. I was up in Oklahoma, and I shot a turkey. I shot a wild turkey when I was out hunting. And it was such a great-tasting turkey. But we had friends that we invited over to eat, and they would not touch it. It was a wild turkey, and because it was not a store-bought turkey, they would not touch it. And I got to tell you, they missed out on some of the best-tasting turkey I have ever had in my life.
Wow, I bet.
We're having
Thanksgiving at my brother's house this year, and he is actually raising 2 turkeys that will be harvesting the day before.
Wow, that's, you know, that sounds good, and he's raising them so they're domesticated, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. All right. But he's raising them the way he wants to raise them.
Yeah.
Have you ever eaten wild turkey?
I haven't.
You know, the turkey I shot. This whole flock that I had run into, there was about a 100-acre cornfield next to the area where these turkeys were living. So I guarantee you that's what those turkeys were eating. They were over there raiding that farmer's cornfield.
Uh-huh.
So I'm sure these were corn-fed turkeys. These were not your average wild turkey. These things were very well-fed, and these birds were eating good food.
Huh.
And it was just phenomenal tasting. But we had friends that just would not touch it because it was wild.
Yeah, that's weird. You know, I can understand some people, you know, we've occasionally had people give us elk steaks or deer or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I can understand somebody not wanting that. I mean, because it's got a different flavor. Sometimes it can be real strong or gamey, but not eating a wild harvested turkey where you would eat the one out of the store is strange to me.
And a lot of the turkeys you buy in stores, they're junk. They're terrible. I mean, they're just, you know, those turkeys are raised in terrible conditions. A lot of them, they're fed garbage. And all the chemicals that they inject into a lot of that meat that you buy in the store is just awful.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, but people love it. You know, if it didn't come, if it doesn't say Butterball, they don't want it.
Right. Exactly. You know, it's safe that way, right?
They
couldn't possibly ever have a recall on like ground turkey or anything like that. Like we're getting all over the country now.
Gosh, you know, all you got to do is probably do a Google search on Butterball turkeys and figure out what the ingredients are in a Butterball turkey. You'd probably never want to buy one ever again.
Yeah.
In fact, I might, for the show notes, I might do that. I might Google it and put that in the show notes.
Yeah, that's our. We don't eat a whole lot of meat at our house, and that's primarily the reason, I think, is I worry about what comes out of the grocery store, especially when you're talking meat. You know, Sunday I made I cooked a roast for dinner, a nice chuck roast, but that was... you know, I talked to the guy who raised it. It's about 50 miles south of us at the farmer's market.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was a grass-fed cow. And, you know, I don't have a problem buying stuff like that. But just going to the grocery store and buying their ground-up meat or whatever it might be, that, I don't know, maybe I'm paranoid, but I'd rather not risk it if I don't have to.
Yeah, no, I don't think you're paranoid. I think you're being smart. I mean, there's, you know, food production is such such a commercial business. It's so commercially driven, and it's so competitive that, you know, the farmers and the food producers are just doing whatever they can to make money. That's pretty much all they're interested in doing right now.
Oh, yeah. It's the bottom line. That's why they pump them full of medication when they're not sick, to make sure they don't get sick, and so that they grow bigger, faster. And
yeah,
it's sad. I think most people would probably not eat meat if they saw start to finish how it was produced.
Oh yeah, all you got to do is watch a cow being slaughtered, and you might not eat a hamburger again.
Yeah.
You know, so what else are you and your family doing to prep these days?
One of the things, when we bought the house that we're in, and we've been here for about 12 years or so, I lose track, but there's a little strip of lawn on the one side of the driveway, and then obviously in front of the house on the other side is a bigger lawn. But the one on the side just never looked good. It was always half dead. I finally just ripped it out. So I'm done with it. It's only, we're talking about maybe a 6 foot wide by 20 foot patch.
Okay.
And so for a couple of years it was just kind of dirt, ugly, and I decided, okay, we need to do something with it. There's more stuff we want to plant. We don't have the room for it in the backyard. And so I there was an old fence that was falling down, so I ripped out the fence. I'm kind of the master scavenger also. You hear some people that like to brag how much they spent on, you know, I spent, you know, $30,000 on my Harley, you know. You know, I'm the other way. I like to brag about how little I spent on things.
Me too. You know, me too. I'm exactly the same way. You know, 5 years ago, I was not. Oh, okay, let's see. This is 2011. 6 years ago, I was more of a spendthrift. Now I'm kind of cheap.
Yeah, and I like I've mentioned to you before, I'm cheap, but I like nice stuff. So anyway, I needed a new fence, and so I just kind of mentioned to a few people here and there that, you know what, I'm looking for some wood, old fence boards, whatever. I had one neighbor, well, I just tore down a fence. Here's some pieces, and so I took that. Another guy gave me the pieces of an old doghouse. Anyway, I split this wood up and I made what I think is kind of a cool, it's a weathered old rustic looking little picket fence that I put around that, and it didn't cost me a dime. In fact, the nails I used to put it together were nails that were in my shop when we bought the house. So it literally cost me nothing to put that fence up.
Great job.
And then I made some planter boxes with cedar fence boards. I got a bunch of stone that another neighbor was getting rid of and put a little stone pathway next to the driveway. And now we've got three different types of raspberries growing there. My wife and my daughter just harvested a whole bunch of garlic that my daughter braided, and it's hanging up drying now. We've got onions in there. We've got green beans. We've got zucchini and squash. And a whole big, we've got a 4x4 foot box that is all red leaf lettuce. And the cool thing about that is we planted it last year. My wife let it go to seed, and then she just cut it down and just left everything sitting there. Mm-hmm. And this spring, boom, huge patch of lettuce in there. We didn't even have to do anything. So
very nice.
So it's in the really cool thing, and we've always had sunflowers in there. That was kind of what we did with the dirt patch, is we planted sunflowers just to make it look nice at least part of the year. And so we get volunteer sunflowers every year. But, you know, we get neighbors coming over and looking at it and going, wow, that looks really great. That's so beautiful and everything. It's like, yeah, and you can eat everything in there, you know? And so I've been trying to convince my wife probably for the last 6 years let's just rip out the front lawn and plant a garden.
Well, you know, I was just going to say that. As a matter of fact, you know, 5 minutes ago, I was going to say, why don't you just turn your front yard into a garden?
Well, that's finally, she has finally agreed. Now, we're not going to get rid of it entirely.
Are you allowed to do that where you live?
No. I would do it anyway, to be honest.
I mean, what are they going to do to you, right?
We live in a desert here in Utah, and it's ridiculous that they mandate that you grow a lawn and dump water on it to make it look nice. You know, you can get a fine if your lawn's dead. You know, it's ridiculous.
Yeah.
So yeah, we're in the process. We need to map it out first. But, you know, there's kind of a pathway that the mailman always takes across the lawn. So we're going to make him his own pathway, either stone or brick. So I got to scrounge up some more stone and brick. Kind of cut the lawn in half, but we're going to shrink it significantly. We're going to put some planter boxes along the one side, similar to what we've done on the other side. And then there's kind of a back corner area that has a bench that right now is kind of overgrown, that my kids like to call their secret garden. There's an old pet snake buried back there, and something else. I don't remember what it is. There's a couple little tombstones for the kids.
One of those pet snakes that didn't make it.
Yeah. So I'm going to build like an arbor there, and we're debating what we want to grow up. That we're debating on Siberian kiwi. I don't know if you've we've looked at it in catalogs. They grow almost like grapes, but they're bigger. But they're kiwi, and they're very tolerant to cold. So I thought that might be kind of cool. So either that or grapes. We're probably going to do some blackberries. We'll do a lot of herbs. Well, the wife likes the lemon balm, and the bees like it too. So we'll probably plant some lemon balm, some more lavender, and just kind of landscape it to where it looks really nice, and have things that are there even through the winter time, so that this doesn't look like a big barren field, you know, in the winter time. Probably put a fence around parts of it, and just, you know, it'll look really nice. And the best thing though is it'll be productive.
Yeah, it's going to produce for you instead of being wasted space.
Yeah. And we're looking to do more things like the raspberries, where you don't have to plant it every year, and it has minimal maintenance. You know, the type of raspberries we have are the type that you just cut them down to the ground every year, throw it all out, and then I can't believe how huge they are, considering they were ground level this spring, and this is only their second year in the ground. So stuff like that doesn't require a whole lot of maintenance, but produces really well. We'll put probably a small strawberry patch in. Last year I tried to, when I was a kid, we had a great big whiskey barrel in our backyard, and my dad connected coffee cans up the middle of it that were hollow, that he filled with gravel, I think, that had holes in it, and then filled it with dirt, and the barrel had holes drilled in the sides, and that was where we grew strawberries. And you just pour water down the middle of it to get water down to all of them, down lower on the sides and everything. And from what I remember, it did okay. Uh-huh. Well, I got these, you know, like the blue water barrels, like the 55-gallon barrels. I acquired some that are similar to that, but the whole top comes off, and they're probably about 30, 40-gallon barrels. And I did that same thing where I used a hole saw, and I drilled holes in the sides, put a PVC pipe down it with holes in it, gravels to water it. And I don't know if the compost I used was bad or if the system just didn't work as well as I remembered it, but our strawberries looked great for about 3 weeks, and then they all died. So that plan that had to get scrapped. So I'm looking for some place that I can put strawberries. sounds like where they're going to go in the front yard now.
Well, you know, at least you're making it produce. That's the thing. And you know, your front yard's not just going to sit there and be wasted space like a lot of people's front, like mine is right now.
Yeah.
Which now you're motivating me to, you know, right here where I live, I don't know if they would, I'd probably be fined or something, unfortunately.
Yeah. Well, my theory on it is if you make it look really nice, because typically what happens is, you know, a cop driving by doesn't look at it and go, ooh, that person's in violation because they don't have a law.
No, it's usually the neighbors that
it's usually
say
the neighbors
something.
That complain about it.
Right.
If you make it look nice, your neighbors aren't going to complain about it because it looks good, you know.
Right, they're going to go, hey, oh, that looks nice. Yeah, and they'll look the other way.
Dirt patch in your front yard, and they're going to go, oh, my gosh, this person's devaluing my property, and, you know, that whole hoopla. But, you know, so if we make it look nice, I don't think we're going to have any issues. And we will still have a lawn. It's just going to be, if I get my way, it's going to be about a third of the size that it is right now, which, like I mentioned earlier, is still not very big, but... You know, you can. It's surprising how much you can produce in a small space.
Oh yeah, you know, I'm going to key in on something you said. You mentioned neighbors being concerned about their property getting devalued. Boy, that's the classic sign right there of somebody that has no idea what prepping is all about. Because, you know, a property that produces has a lot more value than a property that doesn't. And these days, I mean, let's face it. These days, with housing values, they've plummeted so bad. That's such backwards thinking, in my opinion.
Yeah, and really, when you have a property that produces really well like that, you've got a well-established garden and fruit trees and stuff like that. It you know, around here where we are, the kind of prepper mindset is pretty prevalent, and so people will look at that as a positive. But I know that there's areas, and I know of people that would look at that as a negative. They'd look at it and go, oh my gosh, if we bought that house, look at how much work we'd have to be in the yard all the time. You know, I'm fortunate. That's how my wife relaxes. You know,
cool.
Sometimes it's like, you know, our youngest is 2. Sometimes it's like, here, take him. I'm going out and working in the yard. It's like, okay. You know.
Get him out of my hair for a while, right?
You know, and so I like to work in the garden and I like to do those things, but she's really, I mean, that's what she loves. And for me, I don't mind it, but often there's other things I'd rather be doing.
Yeah.
I get excited about getting things set up and building and creating something new, and like this side yard project that I did, I had a lot of fun doing that. I got the kids involved, and that I think is key. If you have kids, man, you got to get them involved with this stuff, and you know, give them a box or give them part of a box. And what do you want to grow? What, you know, if you have kids that are trouble eaters, you know, sometimes if they grow it themselves, they're going to eat it, and they're going to be excited about it, you know?
Yeah, you know, that's a great idea. If they grew it themselves, boy, they're going to be eating it because, you know, they've got something invested in it.
Yeah, and what better thing can you do for a kid than teach them how to feed themselves? You know?
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the best things you can do.
I mean, it's, I don't know, it's great. It's fun to watch, you know, my 2-year-old out there picking green beans with his mom, and, you know, sometimes... We got to be careful with the tomatoes because he just picks all of them. he hasn't learned yet which ones are good and which ones are not quite ready yet. So, but
yeah.
It's fun. You know, they like it, and they, you know, what kid doesn't like to play in the dirt?
Oh yeah, every kid does, and that's a lost art these days. I think probably the only thing, Jason, that would be as valuable as teaching a kid how to feed themselves is to teach them how to make money as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and if you can teach them both things, if you can teach them how to make money and keep money, and I'm going to emphasize keep money.
Yeah, that was always my downfall when I was a kid. I could always make money. I could never hang on to it for very long.
Yeah. If you can teach them how to make money and keep it, and then teach them how to feed themselves and how to grow their food, You know, I think that's probably about 75% of what they're going to need to know how to survive the rest of their life.
Yeah, I mean, and those are skills that you can apply to so many other aspects of life. But you know, they're skills that we should all have. You know, my dad, he always tried to plant a garden. I don't ever remember a garden doing very well at our house in California. We had a great orange tree, and we had great blackberries and boysenberries. Boy, we got some of the biggest berries I've ever seen off those plants. I don't remember getting anything else, to be honest. And so it's been kind of a, it's like I said, it's something my wife's excited about, and so we kind of worked together to figure things out and how to use compost and amend your soil. And man, we've got some of the best soil, I think, in the neighborhood in our yard.
That's great. That's great. Well, you know what, Jason? We've only got about 5 minutes left, but I want to take this last 5 minutes to shift gears just a little bit. Thanks for everything you've talked about as far as beekeeping and you know, turning your yard into growing produce and chickens and things like that. I appreciate that. This is all really good stuff. Let's shift gears a little bit to your holster making business, because I know that there's some people that don't listen to the Handgun World Show. And from a prepper standpoint, I want you to comment on what you think, or where do you think that concealed carry and security, in your mind, where does that rank in terms of your list of preparations?
Well, obviously, it's very high for me.
Mm-hmm.
I don't set foot outside. I mean, I've got my gun on me right now, sitting in the house.
No, just curious. What are you packing right now?
You know, my favorite carry gun right now is my Ruger SR9 Compact.
Cool, SR9C. All right.
Yeah, it was like Excalibur. I put that in my hand, and you know, the angels sang, and I went, "Wow, that's stuff I gotta have."
All right, so you're sitting in your house while you're talking to me, and you're packing just in case something happens. But yeah. So, what do you think it ranks?
You know, food and shelter are the two most important things that I think you need to be concerned about when it comes to being prepared for anything.
I 100% agree with that.
And I would say that probably. And I wouldn't necessarily even say a gun or firearms, but I would say self-defense. We were probably getting some noise in the background there.
Yeah, is that the two-year-old getting a little excited there?
Something's going on. The sister's probably tormenting him.
No, anyway, that never happens.
I would say self-defense is probably number three.
Okay.
Just off the cuff. And you know, there's some people that just they're not comfortable with firearms, and you know, I can respect that. I think you should make an effort to become comfortable with them, because it doesn't take much. You know, most people go out shooting and it's easy to love. You know, if you don't have a good way to defend yourself and defend your family, you know, in some situations, the food and the shelter don't last very long.
Well, you know, that's kind of my thought, and I'm glad you said that. You know, here we've spent the last 45 minutes or so talking about growing a garden, and you're keeping bees, and let's see, we've talked about, you know, raising chickens and things and growing our own food. But if the stink really does hit the fan, and the people who have not prepared start to get violent, I think your garden's probably going to get raided pretty darn quick. And if you don't have a way to protect your property, I think that could be a problem. Don't you agree?
Yeah, I don't think people are going to come after gardens as readily as a lot of people think.
Okay.
Because the people and the type of people that you're describing right now, or what we're seeing in London right now.
Just
kind of the dirtbag people that are looking for an opportunity to take advantage whenever they can. And those type of people that have that sort of mentality, I think their mentality is at the grocery store, and they've never done anything for themselves. They're lazy, and they're looking for the quick, easy thing to go to somebody's garden and pick tomatoes. Then, you know, they're not going to know what to do with it anyway.
Okay, they're not going to raid your garden, but they're going to try to find out where your food supply is and raid that.
It definitely is a possibility. It's definitely on there, and I would hope that a lot of people are waking up to the possibilities. I mean, the stuff that's happening in London right now, we're not that far away from it, and we have seen things like that happening in I believe it was Boston recently. A number of times, and I heard somebody today that I was listening to said, I think it was Michael Bain's podcast, said there was a flash mob, is what they call it, at the Minnesota State Fair, where these guys use their phones, say, everybody go here, and they started beating people, and, you know, that kind of dirtbag mentality is out there, and I think the closer you are to a bigger city and a denser population, the greater chance you have of that happening. And, you know, and if you, whether you live in those areas or not, I mean, we travel through them, if nothing else, and if you don't have a means of defending yourself when something like that happens, you know, you're screwed. Look at what happened in the the LA riots. You know, I can't remember the guy's name, but the guy, you know, the truck driver, they got pulled out of his truck at an intersection and practically beaten to death.
You're talking about the Rodney King riots, aren't
you? Yeah, yeah. I mean, that guy, he got up that morning, he went to work like he does every day, and he was probably driving the same route that he has driven every day for the last 20 years. I don't know, you know, how long he did it, but there was no reason for that day to be any different than any others, and he just got stuck right in the middle of a worst possible scenario. And, you know, from what you saw, I mean, the poor guy couldn't do anything to help himself.
Yeah, well, you know, you bring up the situation of what's going on in London right now. You know, that those are the people. What did you describe them? The dirtbag people, right?
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's my belief, and please, you know, don't feel like you have to agree with me. If you don't think that I'm coming from a sound philosophy here, please tell me. But it's my belief that when things get bad, if they do, the people that have not prepared have a much higher propensity to become like those dirtbags, to become violent, to start to get desperate. They become desperate because they didn't prepare. And the longer that it takes for services to be restored and for food supplies to be restored, the longer that takes, the more desperate and violent that these people have a propensity to be. And if you are in that situation, and you know, you mentioned densely populated areas. Well, I agree with you. I think a densely populated area, it's even more important for you to have a way to defend yourself than if you're in the country. What do you think about that?
No, I would agree with that. And you know, there's a certain percentage of the population, like we're seeing in London right now, that just need an excuse to run amok and to pillage and loot and get away with whatever they can because they feel like there will be no repercussions if they do.
Right.
There's another percentage of the population, like you're talking about, where if there's a natural disaster or something to that effect, like you're saying, where we lose services and they're gone for a few days, a week, 2 weeks. Like you said, the longer that goes, you're going to find people that are were good, reasonable people on a day-to-day basis that become less and less reasonable and sane, I would say, and they're going to be desperate if they aren't prepared. So, yeah, I agree with that 100%.
not just a natural disaster, but what if there's some kind of a government collapse? Maybe it might not be the federal government. What if it's a county, a city, or a state government? You know, what if we really are? I mean, I hate to go tinfoil hat on people because, you know, everybody who listens to my show knows I don't like to go into that tinfoil hat type stuff. But it's a very real possibility that at some point, I don't know, I'm not going to say it's next month, next year, or even in the next 5 years or whatever, but at some point, if we stay on the course that we're on, there are going to be municipalities that are going to go broke, and there are people who are not going to get what they have been depending on for many, many years. And I think that's when they can get a little wacko as well, don't you?
Yeah. And I think the more the people that depend on the government the most are the ones that are going to melt down first. And I think, again, you know, going back to London, I think that's exactly what we're seeing. Not that their services have stopped, but they have such a huge society that relies on the government that they feel what's the word I'm looking for?
Cheated?
No, that they feel that that's their due, that you owe me this.
Right.
You know, they're living on the dole, as you would say. And I think that for whatever reason, this population has decided that, you know what, I deserve more than what I've been getting, and so they decided they're going to run out and take it. And, you know, where our government's trying to take us right now is exactly down that path of entitlements. That's what I was looking for. The people that feel entitled to things. Well, this country was founded on a philosophy of if you come here and you work hard, you can accomplish anything you want to. And now we're trying to change that philosophy to this is such a great country, you don't have to do anything and we'll take care of you. And that's just going to drive us into what we're seeing in Europe, you know, people that depend on the government for everything. And, you know, when they decide that they're not happy, guess what? There's nothing the police are going to do to stop them. I heard they had 60,000 policemen on the streets of London last night, and there were still stuff going on that they had no control over. That goes right back to, you know, living in a country that allows you to defend yourself with a firearm. You know, I think it was, again, the Rodney King riots, you know, watching that Korean guy standing on the roof of his business with his AK with signs painted on the board covering up his windows saying, you come here and you're going to get shot. That guy's business was there when the riot was done, and his livelihood wasn't taken from him by people that, you know, for whatever reason, decided he didn't need it as much as they did. Clear.
Okay, well, we had some technical difficulties there. I'm sorry about that. I think we lost our internet connection. My computer was saying it was no longer connected to the internet, so that's what happened. But the funny thing is, even though my computer was saying it was no longer connected to the internet, I could still hear you, and I think all the listeners could hear you.
Oh, well, that's good.
Yeah, so we heard everything you said there, and but anyway, you know, you made some good points, and I think this is probably a good stopping point, and I really appreciate you coming on the show and sharing with us about your prepper lifestyle.
Well, thanks. It was fun. It's a fun topic to talk about. Maybe
yeah.
Next time we can talk about preparing for zombies or something.
Yeah, maybe I'll do a zombie show. You know, I've actually had a couple people that have asked me. They said, hey, Bob, we know you don't go tinfoil hat, but could you do a zombie show? So maybe we will.
Yeah, that would be a good time.
Yeah, it'd be a lot of fun. Well, I just want to remind everybody that Jason's website is concealmentsolutions.com. Excellent holsters. I'm really looking forward to getting mine. And I think it's really cool that you're so diversified. You know, you're making holsters for concealed carry, but you're also living the preparedness lifestyle. I think that's pretty cool.
Yeah, well, they go hand in hand. I mean, that's why I started buying guns to begin with, was really for preparedness.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, it seems like people buy them for preparedness or for self-defense or hunting, and it does kind of seem like it all kind of goes hand in hand. And so, once again, everybody, his website is concealmentsolutions.com. I think you're sending me a Sidewinder, aren't you?
I am. There's a little extra stuff in there, so I'll let you be surprised when you open the box.
Oh, really cool. I'm looking forward to it now. Thanks a lot. I appreciate it. Well, Jason, thanks again for coming on today's Survival Show and talking about what you're doing as a family.
Well, thanks for having me. Like I said, it was a good time. Anytime we can talk about preparedness and I get to talk about my family and our lifestyle, it's always a good time.
Well, great. I'm going to let you go and stay safe, keep prepping, and keep pushing on, okay?
All right. You do the same.
Thanks. Take care.
Yep.
Bye. All right, Jason, thanks very much. That was a terrific interview. Jason, thank you for coming on the show and sharing with the listeners how to make your home work for you. Some good ideas on that. And if you have some ideas, if you're listening and you say, hey, you know what? I have some ideas on how to make your homestead work for you, I'd like to hear about them. You can send me an email. If you want to put together an audio podcast, you can do that. It doesn't have to be anything long. It could be just a couple of minutes if you have the means to record something. If you want some tips on how to record audio, let me know. Email me, bob@todayssurvival.com, and I'll get you some ideas on that. Also, let me say, in the announcements, I told you that I wasn't going to go ahead and hit you up for any memberships on the forums and things like that. This podcast and the forum associated with it are always going to be free, but I do want to offer my Survival Champions Club podcast. My Survival Champions Club podcast is a little something extra that people who want to volunteer, not obligated, but people want to voluntarily support my program. It's only $15, and I've put together a pretty cool two-hour podcast on some extra preparedness ideas, and it's packed with good interviews and so forth from some other people. It's not just me talking on there. There's good interviews from some other people. Some of them are listeners to this show. If you want to invest in that and help out my show a little bit, it's only $15. Go to todayssurvival.com, click the Buy Now button, and you'll see the instructions, and I'll email it to you. All right, so that pretty much wraps it up. There's not much more I can add to this already excellent interview. So with that, I'm going to go ahead and close the show, folks. This is Bob Main. You've just listened to another episode of Today's Survival Show, episode 149, to be exact. It's been my goal to help you do what you can with what you have wherever you are. I hope this interview achieved that goal. So thanks again for tuning in. I'll catch you next time. Goodbye.